You're listening to Expansion on republicbroadcasting.org, the RBN network, and this is Sophia, your host. We're entering our second hour now with Howard Strauss and Charlotte Gerson. And I was telling you about a friend of mine who is no fool, very well informed on everything political, historical, but gaining weight, and he finally decided that he was going to have to knock out two things, which were the staples of his diet. The first was junk food, convenience food, and the second was diet pop. And he told me he was addicted to diet pop, and he couldn't break the habit. He, I don't know how many cans of it he drank a day, but he would eat out at restaurants and, you know, order bad food and this diet pop. And he said he had actually begun to try Perrier instead of diet pop. So now he had to find restaurants with the same food that he was accustomed to that had Perrier also. And he told me Perrier doesn't taste like any. It doesn't have any taste, and I don't like it. I don't know how I'm going to be able to stick to it. And I remembered that he had told me he was a devout Catholic. So I said, all right, I'm going to tell you something. You're never going to forget it, okay? And he said, okay. And I said, diet pop is the devil's drink. And that was it. That was what it took. He called me a week later and said, I haven't had any diet pop in 8 days. And then he was concerned about losing the weight. And I said, all right, we're ready for step two. Here it is. Fat is the devil's playground. And when I explained to him that fat is a repository, body fat, of these chemicals, these toxins, and it slowly delivers them into our system and makes us sicker, and it doesn't help to carry body fat at all, now he's losing weight.
Well,
you know, if you look at the biblical exhortations of various different religions, many of them know this information or knew this information 2,000 years ago, but they didn't have the same phraseology, the quote scientific unquote phraseology that we have now. So they put it in religious terms because they wanted to keep their religious adherents healthy, reproducing, and numerous enough to fight off attacks from outside.
Yeah.
So what they did was they just said, okay, when you eat such and such, it is a sin against your body, or it is a sin. And what they're really saying is, you are damaging your own body if you do thus and such. If you're damaging your mind, you're damaging your soul if you do acts that are against this religious tenet. And if you look at that structure, they were really just trying to keep their people healthy and thriving and productive.
Right. And so they developed a way to market certain life-supporting practices through the corridor or channel of religion.
That's correct.
We have to somehow edify people in a way that they won't block it because it's too inconvenient to educate themselves. So that's why I tried these two little tricks with my friend. And now, then I sent him eating and healing cancer, and now he is so excited. Now he gets it. But I had to break through with something in his own belief system, you know?
Yes, that's true. And it's also, you know, it's very difficult. My father already stated many, many years ago people generally don't want to change their habits and their diets and their preferences until, as he put it, the knife at their throat. And we find that today, that a lot of people, you know, find wonderful excuses, you know, why they shouldn't stop smoking. Well, I've smoked for such a long time and I'm perfectly all right and I like it and I enjoy it. Why should I?
You're listening to Expansion on republicbroadcasting.org, the RBN network. This is Sophia, your host, and I have today with me Charlotte Gerson and Howard Strauss, and we are talking about the Gerson therapy And the new film, The Beautiful Truth, that's opened this month in New York and L.A. Charlotte, you were saying about masking we women and their use of personal care products and makeup, and not to say that men don't use products themselves also.
Yes, men also use them, but not quite to the extent that women do.
Yes.
And most people don't realize to what extent anything you put on the skin goes through the pores and into the bloodstream. And that's what I'm trying to point out. Even lipstick, of course, that you also swallow, you keep putting it on. And one of the absolute worst cosmetics used are the underarm deodorants and antiperspirants. Because, you know, the body tries its very best. It just keeps trying to release and get rid of accumulated poisons. And part of that, the body does that with perspiration, and especially the underarm perspirations. And that's frankly why it's smelly, because the body is trying to get rid of poisons and disturbing substances. So and nowadays, the advertisers and the pharmaceutical people tell you, oh, well, but you can't afford to do that. You can't offend people around you. You have to stop that perspiration. And then they sell you antiperspirants and deodorants and things like that. Those go directly into the lymph nodes on the arm, and they push back the poisons the body is trying to get rid of right into the lymphatic systems of the breast. And then women are surprised they get breast cancer. And by the way, breast cancer in men is now rapidly increasing because they too use this underarm deodorant. And I'm sure that it has a connection. I haven't seen any study about it, but there must be a connection because it's very toxic and very damaging to force the poisons the body tries to get rid of to get back into the lymphatic system. It's a terrible idea.
Well, yes, but again, you have that whole social pressure of people not wanting to have dark rings on their clothing, mm-hmm. showing sweating, mm-hmm. and the smell, and all of that. I mean, it's especially adolescence. It all starts in adolescence, I think, when suddenly they're overrun with hormones and their bodies are doing weird things and they're perspiring at the wrong time. And, you know,
well, but Sophia, you have to understand that if they're not so toxic, if they're less toxic and eat less toxic food and drink less toxic drinks, then their perspiration will not be odoriferous. What happens is, remember that there are pheromones, which are powerful sexual attractants, in the perspiration. Now, why would nature put powerful sexual attractants in our sewer, where people couldn't stand each other's smell? They don't. There's nothing quite as attractive physically as good, clean, healthy body with a light perspiration from being out in the sun.
Yeah.
But not if you're toxic. If you're toxic, you smell like a sewer.
Yep, I know. And I think they sell these things, body gloss now, and it's awful.
No, everything. You know, many young women use 20 and 30 body preparations every day. And the kinds of chemicals that are in these preparations are neurotoxic, they are mutagenic, and they're carcinogenic. And they come straight into the bloodstream because the pores just absorb the material right into the bloodstream without even if you ate the stuff, you'd be better off because your stomach acid would have a chance to neutralize it. But instead, you're putting it right into your bloodstream by absorbing it through your skin.
Right,
so if you look at these beautiful, beautiful young women looking out from magazine covers, you'll see that their irises have these dark rings around them. And it seems intriguing, and it seems very very interesting to have these light blue eyes or light green eyes with a dark ring around them. But what that indicates is iridology tells us, the study of the iris tells us, that indicates a toxicity of the skin, of the periphery of the body. And so they're putting these toxic materials directly on their skin. They're poisoning themselves, and it's showing up in their eyes.
Mm. Well, somehow all this has to be made known, because the pressure, the social pressure, the social, what's considered normal, and everybody does it, and their friends are all doing it, it's going to take an incredibly strong personality at age whatever, 16, 18, any age, to resist.
But you know, that can change, Sophia. Let me give you an example of how it's already changed for the worse.
Mm-hmm.
Nowadays, children who are of normal weight in their classes, 7, 8, 9-year-olds in their classes, are getting teased mercilessly because everybody else is obese. So if 95% of the children in a class are obese, the ones who stick out and the ones who get teased are the ones who are normal. So the socialization and the peer pressure can change. Nobody has the will to do it. Nobody has the will to change the normal.
Right. So you're saying the skinny kids are getting teased now?
Yes, they're getting teased mercilessly because they're so underweight.
Mm. And they're even told that their mothers don't love them and they don't give them enough food and, you know, they're making life tough for them.
And all these other kids are just grossly obese and are going to end up with problems like heart disease and asthma and diabetes and all of these other obesity-related problems, one of which, by the way, is cancer. And cancer is now increasing among children to the point where it's the number one killer of children. It used to be the number one disease killer of children, accidents being first. But now it's the number one killer of children in our society. How terrible is that? Cancer used to be a degenerative disease of old age.
Yeah, and now they have the whole cancer survivor culture where, you know, people are marching and wearing ribbons and donating, and it almost seems like this is part of it's becoming the norm. Somebody has cancer, and, oh, well, we'll just wear a ribbon and do a walk and send
them. Because cancer is so prevalent in our culture that today one out of 2.3 people, and rising, by the way, one out of 2.3 people will get cancer sometime in their lifetime.
Yeah,
that means out of the three of us, you know, at least one of us will.
Well, if statistically speaking, but, you know, we're all vegans. You are Gerson persons, and I'm...
Well, exactly. But if there's, you know, that's how prevalent it is. If there's 10 people in a room, then four of them will be, at some point, get cancer. And the rest of them will get heart disease, stroke, diabetes, or some other grotesque problem.
Yes. Now, apparently we have a caller waiting. Would you like to take the call?
Yeah, let's see what the caller would like to know.
All right. I believe his name is Paul.
All right.
Paul, are you with us?
Yes, ma'am, I am. A couple of points. I'm sitting here listening, and I feel where you're coming from. But the way I look at it is like this. If, you know, I heard today on the news on MSNBC that two people had been killed at a Walmart because they got trampled because individuals couldn't wait to get into Walmart, and one person had a miscarriage because they just, I mean, it's mindless. And I'm sitting here, I don't use deodorant myself. I'm not a vegan. I wish I felt like I could be one. But, you know, I've seen a wife's swap special one time, and it was this vegan family. It was like cult members. I mean, I'm glad that I've seen an insight into these people, because when they switched families, I mean, if you ate meat, you were evil. I mean, they looked at you like, and the thing was, at the end of the show, the lady ended up eating meat. But that's one thing. But as far as the poisons and the individuals who don't get it, I'm so tired, ma'am. I think if you don't get it, let them kill themselves, because to me they're like part of the problem. I hate to sound like I don't care, but if an individual doesn't understand and can't comprehend the dangers, I mean, it's like this skin cancer and every other cancer issue. I mean, I've lived around the world. I've seen individuals, including myself, have been in the sun, lived around people that have been in the sun their whole entire life and never gotten skin cancer. And when you mention the fact that, hey, maybe it's the sunblock that you're putting on. Do you ever think about that? Oh, no, it's not the sunblock. It's the terrible sun. I mean, I don't have time for this. There's so many important things. Let them go. If they don't get it, let them go.
Well, all right. Can we ask our...
May I address this, please?
Yes.
Normally I would say just fine. I have a solution. I'll help you if you want help. And if you don't want help, well, so be it, and may God be with you. But the problem is that that they affect very, very seriously affect our economy, our medical insurance. We end up having to pay that cost when the medical insurance doubles and triples and quadruples, as it's doing so rapidly. It's vastly outstrips our inflation. And so we end up paying for all of that, and it's bankrupting our country.
All right, I'd like to pick this up on the other side of the break.
Sure.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Listening to Expansion on the RBN network, republicbroadcasting.org. This is Sophia, your host, and we are with Charlotte Gerson and Howard Strauss today, and we just had our caller lay out a few issues. Howard, you were addressing the load on the economy.
Yeah, tremendous load on the economy because of our cancer problem that gets covered by medical insurance. It's not health insurance, it's medical insurance. But then when you add to that the other diseases that are caused by eating improperly, diabetes and heart disease and stroke and so forth, it's trillions of dollars that we have to pay that we certainly won't be taking advantage of in insurance. The other thing is, he said that being a vegetarian or a vegan is like a cult. Well,
yeah.
I think it's the other way around. I think eating meat in this country is such a cult, it's almost a religion, that if you don't do it, you're considered some kind of a nutcase or a heretic, and they all work on you to try to convert you into eating meat. You know what? I don't care if other people eat meat. I don't have to deal with the consequences of that, except indirectly that I have to pay for it. So I don't care if other people eat meat. I wish they didn't care that I don't.
Well, the idea, first of all, I want to bring up the idea of protein. I'm quiet about the fact that I don't eat meat. I don't blast it to everyone around me. But people will say almost apologetically to me that they tried being vegetarian or vegan even, but they just can't do it because I need the protein.
No, and they don't need the protein because if you look at the largest and heaviest, beefiest animals on the face of the planet, the surface animals on the face of the planet, you're way, way down the list in size and muscle before you get to the first meat eater. So if you look at, you know, elephants and water buffaloes, rhinoceros and hippopotamus and all of the big antelopes and so forth, they're all bigger than the biggest lion. So the water buffalo could take a lion out without even thinking about it. So when you look at those, where are they getting their protein from? They must be getting their protein from grass and from vegetables and vegetarian. Otherwise, there would be no animal protein on the planet. Even gorillas, which are primates, are vegetarians, big, beefy, strong animals that you wouldn't want to cross.
Right. But these people will insist that they don't feel good unless they eat meat, that they tried it already. So somewhere it's in their mind. They have decided this is how they feel, and meat makes me feel this way.
And you know what? That's perfectly okay, and I don't think you should give them any trouble about it. There are myriad good reasons set forth, especially in T. Colin Campbell's book, The China Study, for not eating meat and not eating animal protein. And most of them have to do with the disease-causing potential of these substances. But it's all right if somebody else wants to eat meat. I'm not invested in them not eating meat.
There's one other thing, if I please may add, and this is very important. There are certain people, when they're very seriously thyroid damaged due to fluoride and chlorine in the water and so on, they really do feel poorly unless they do get some heavy foods, and it doesn't have to be meat, but they zero in on meat, and they really honestly believe and they experience that if they don't eat animal products, if they only eat vegan or vegetarian, they have little or no energy. So they really convince themselves they need it. What they truly need is proper nutrition, namely that they avoid all fluoride and chlorine and all of that so that their thyroid functions, and in that case they have no further problem with being a protein craving. It's not even a deficiency, because there's another problem. Once protein is heated, and there are no animal proteins on the market that are not heat damaged, once they're heated, they're actually poorly digested, and they're not building the body. They don't do anything for you. It's not a good food. Okay, and one other thing I think that has not yet been brought up, very, very important. The body, the normal human body, has extremely powerful defenses, among others, like the immune system, the enzyme system, and so on. And with those defenses in place, just normal living and good health, cancer is impossible. You cannot possibly get cancer. In order to get cancer, you first have to destroy the defenses. And you do that slowly, day by day, with junk food and poor food and with artificial sugars and with Coca-Colas and with McNuggets, chicken nuggets, and with all of these so-called convenience foods. That's what destroys the body's defenses. And even if for another year or two or five you feel good, you don't realize that slowly, slowly the defenses are gone, and eventually it'll get you.
Right. Well, we're into our next break. We'll be back in a couple of minutes, and then I'd like to continue.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
You're listening to Expansion on RepublicBroadcasting.org, the RBN Network, and this is Sophia, your host, and I'm speaking today with Charlotte Gerson and Howard Strout. And we were in our last break, I did go to my bookshelf and I pulled a book. And I just want to read this because it is possibly the most virulent attack against vegetarians that I've ever read anywhere. It's from Kitchen Confidential by the chef Anthony Bourdain. And this was, I believe, a bestseller. And on page 70, he says, "Vegetarians and their Hezbollah-like splinter faction, the vegans, are a persistent irritant to any chef worth a damn. To me, life without veal stock, pork fat, sausage, organ meat, demi-glace, or even stinky cheese is a life not worth living. Vegetarians are the enemy of everything good and decent in the human spirit, an affront to all I stand for, the pure enjoyment of food. The body, these waterheads imagine, is a temple that should not be polluted by animal protein. It's healthier, they insist, though every vegetarian waiter I've ever worked with is brought down by any rumor of a cold. Oh, I'll accommodate them. I'll rummage around for something to feed them, for a vegetarian plate, if called on to do so. $14 for a few slices of grilled eggplant and zucchini suits my food cost fine. So, I don't know myself what to do when I am in the presence of someone who is so, loud about his hatred of vegetarians as people who don't appreciate fine food.
Well, Sophia, you know, I can understand if you look at what I said earlier, that eating meat is more of a religion and a cult than being a vegetarian.
Yeah.
Then there is a perfect illustration of it. Something which arouses the ire so strongly is obviously not something that it means that if the opposition is really right, then you're calling into question everything he stands for in his whole life, which is a religion.
Right. And then, as Charlotte brought up earlier, there is the concept of nutrition. It isn't just about do you eat meat or don't you. It's the idea of are you nourished or not by what you're eating.
Precisely.
Everything you're eating.
Now, remember that book I mentioned, The China Study by T. Colin Campbell?
Yes.
T. Colin Campbell, it may be one of our top nutritionists in the United States, possibly in the world. Acknowledged, he's been on every advisory and consulting panel for the U.S. government for years. He was raised on a dairy farm and used to make fun of vegetarians from his lectern. He was a professor at Cornell. The more studies he saw, the more studies he did. Eventually, he could no longer justify being eating animal protein, and he is now an avowed vegan. And at age 78, he runs 6 miles a day. He was able, in very, very carefully controlled experiments, not only to induce cancer growth, but also to turn it off and on simply by adding or deleting animal protein from the diet of lab animals. He was able to turn it on and off. And we see that in our patients down at the clinic in Mexico. We see that if they get a hold of and start eating animal protein, their cancer will once again take off, whereas on a vegan diet, it reverses. When you see that, you just no longer want to eat meat.
Right. That's due to the pancreatic enzymes I learned from Mike Anderson, trypsin and chymotrypsin.
That's correct.
Yes. This is the one demonstration that I can give people theoretically, that immediately sells them on lowering at least their intake of animal protein. I tell them that, and I'll refresh for the audience here, that the cancer cell is coated with a protein shield, and only the pancreatic enzymes, trypsin and chymotrypsin, can break that shield down so that the immune system can then take care of the cancer cell. And our animal protein is digested by trypsin and chymotrypsin. So if you take in animal protein, your trypsin and chymotrypsin are being used to digest the animal protein, and you have nothing left for cancer.
Correct.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's so simple. That was the jewel that I got from Mike Anderson's video. And you mention it, Charlotte, in a more general way in the Beautiful Truth. You talk about the pancreas.
Yes.
Yes. And so then this brings me to the desiccation of another fine point, or dissection maybe is the word I want. What is fine food? Bourdain is talking about fine food being, you know, fats that are, and gravies and sauces and stocks. All this goes into the making of a fine food. And we're talking about a whole other fine food, and it's a different sensibility. It's a different orientation.
Well, you know, Sophia, what this chef has has done is he's spent his life learning how and becoming very, very successful at amusing our taste buds and mm-hmm. making that the focus of his life. But the problem is once the food gets past your taste buds, your body has to deal with it. And when you start dumping these things into your body that are antithetical to its health and well-being, then you will end up, in spite of the fact that your mouth feels really good and your brain registers all these pleasant sensations and textures, your body ends up quite ill.
Yes.
I think there's something else to consider. This nice chef and all that, you know, condemning people who are vegetarians, especially also, you know, as evil. I wonder why he doesn't think that killing animals wholesale and murdering them and raising them in the vicious, most horrible way, that isn't one of the worst crimes against nature. And then all of a sudden being vegetarian can be a crime. I mean, you know, he has a totally distorted view of life and knowledge and understanding.
Well, I guess this is an example of a person who's completely cut off from nature. I don't think this guy ever walks in a field, you know, and looks at animals from that perspective. But he's in an industry, and he's at the peak of his industry.
Well, in a way, it's pretty much the same as the pharmaceutical industry. You know, it's an industry, and they have to make a living, and they do it by propagandizing their movement. And, you know, since my father testified before Congress and showed for the first time ever recovered patients before a congressional committee, showed that cancer could be healed, that was, what, in 1954, Howard?
No, that was 1946. July 1, 2, 3, 1946.
Okay. All right. It was 1946. That's how long ago now? 62 years?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. In the 62 years since, when the public was informed, when the pharmaceutical industries were informed that this is a heal, it is a cure for cancer. They're screaming and yelling. They're searching for a cure. It's not true. They're suppressing a cure. And the absolute worst thing is that between the chemical and pharmaceutical and medical industries, and medicine is an industry, let's not kid ourselves, they have killed more people than Hitler and Stalin together.
And Genghis Khan and most of the wars.
Yeah, and again, that's why I ask, maybe there's something much more dark going on here. You know, it's not just oversight. It can't just be money. There's got to be something operating here.
Well, there probably
I think it's population control,
population by
pharmaceuticals and illness and food and pollution of our water and our air and poisoning by fluoride and chlorine and so forth.
Yes, the fluoride and chlorine, and it's interesting to note, as Howard pointed out in his research, it's interesting to note that Hitler and Stalin both used fluoride in the water supply of their prisoners because it made them compliant and unwilling to, you know, react. That's what they're doing to us, and that is pretty horrifying. As you are saying, it's seriously unethical. They want to be able to control the public and foist money and foist expensive drugs on them and kill them before they are able to draw Social Security.
Well, that to me, that is the bigger picture. And a lot of people wouldn't believe it. They wouldn't. They would say, no, this is just lack of education, that society has evolved in the wrong direction. But I don't think that's the case.
Oh, it hasn't evolved accidentally. It has been very
right.
carefully marshaled in that direction by the profit-making drug and food industries, which are huge industries, and they want to make us be their customers, not their beneficiaries.
Right. You know, I want to bring up one other thing because it's always fascinated me, and I am scouring my bookshelf for this book. Oh, here it is. Look at that. I finally found it just in time. It's called Adrift, 76 Days Lost at Sea by Stephen Callahan. And it was a bestseller also. It's about a guy. He has the world record for survival on a not very sturdy craft in the open ocean. So his boat capsized, and he got off, luckily, within his dinghy, which was just a rubber dinghy, and he had a little kit, survival kit, that had a fork and a knife in it and a flashlight maybe and this solar still to make water out of seawater. But he was on the ocean for 76 days and just literally drifting and starving, of course. He had no radio. He had no way to contact anyone for help. So what I learned he did was he would lean overboard and stab at fish with his fork until he basically lost that. And he'd catch flying fish with his hands in the air. And he lost all muscle mass in his lower body. His legs atrophied, but his arms and shoulders remained strong. And what he did was, when he caught anything, which wasn't a frequent occurrence, he would rip it open, the fish. He would first eat the eyes to get the vitreous humor, mm-hmm. liquids. Mm-hmm. Then he would eat the organ meat. Mm-hmm. And then he would put the flesh of the fish on the edge of his dinghy to dry out. And as it dried, he would feed on it until such time that, you know, he had another fish ready and he had done the same thing. But his preference was for these really gross innards, the vital organs, the heart, the liver, all the most rich parts of anything he caught. And I thought to myself, well, I guess when the body is deeply stressed and it needs to absolutely survive, that's the number one imperative, it will seek to eat the richest cholesterol-laden, because our body makes cholesterol too, but in very small amounts. But it'll eat these parts of other animals such that it can kind of get the quickest foothold. But when a body is thriving, those particular kinds of food will cause it to not thrive. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Definitely, absolutely. But you see, there's something else that we have to remember. When this man survived on fish, this was raw. And you remember when we were discussing meat, I especially pointed out that all animal products, all animal proteins that are on our tables and in the supermarkets, they're all heat processed, cooked, and damaged. This man was eating raw, and that helped to keep him alive.
Mm.
Okay? And
yeah.
That protein is much more readily available to us. But who nowadays eats raw fish? A few Japanese still do, but other than that, they don't do that.
So, once again, Howard, would you like to comment on the food choice? Well, he didn't have much choice, but the order in which he fed on the different parts of what he managed to catch.
Well, you know, at such point as you are so deeply stressed, your body you are in the end an animal, and you have animal instincts. And when you're that deeply stressed and not anywhere near your culture or belief system or anything else, your body will go for the things that it knows it needs.
Mm-hmm.
And the organ meats are not just rich in cholesterol. My goodness, they're rich in so many other nutrients that we need. The liver is rich in liver enzymes to replenish our liver. The heart is a very, very powerful muscle. The muscles around the fish that make it swim, that constitute the flesh of the fish, are not very rich food, and he sensed that when he ate the stuff.
I see. Yes. Well,
I believe there's something else that we may have left out. When Eskimos cut through the ice and finally find either a fish or a seal their families are around the hole in the ice, and they cut this animal open, and they first take out the liver, this enormously rich organ of nutrients, and divide that among the family raw as is, cut right straight out of the fish or out of the animal that they've just caught. Okay, very important, and makes a big difference when it's raw. And, of course, the nature people and the nature animal eat raw.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I guess there we are again, that cooking, it's part of our culture. I don't even know how people evolved into so much cooking. Do you?
No, I don't really know, except, yes, I think they found out somehow when they had caught some animal and they were having a bonfire, that when their flesh of the animal was burned, it had unusually good or interesting or stimulating taste and flavor. And that's probably how they started, but I frankly don't know.
Well, once again, our chef could probably tell us, but we don't want to ask him.
No.
Well, so, no, there is some origin for cooking in the Roman burnt offerings, because they would burn these animals on bonfires, and then, of course, the priests would end up eating the flesh in order to support themselves. So that's how the priests supported themselves in ancient days. They would take the burned sacrifices, and that would be their meals.
I see. Well, we are into our last little break, and then we have our concluding segment. So we'll be back in a couple of minutes. You're listening to Expansion on Republic Broadcasting Network, republicbroadcasting.org. This is Sophia, your host, and we're concluding today a very fascinating 2 hours with Howard Strauss and Charlotte Gerson, and we were discussing the Gerson therapy. I want to draw attention back to the website, www.gerson.org, and Charlotte's book, Healing the Gerson Way, Defeating Cancer and Other Chronic Diseases, which is a very easy place to start if you want to edify yourself as to what can be done to reverse the directions in which we're going. Apparently, it's quite simple, as we've discussed over this 2 hours. But I think we've gotten into some very fascinating little nooks and crannies, and I appreciate all your input. Is there anything you want to say in conclusion, either of you?
I'd like to stress especially the fact that the Gerson therapy is not a cancer therapy, although the books, one of the major books says so. But Dr. Gerson immediately explains that when you truly heal, it's not a disease, it's healing the whole body. And we regularly find that even if patients have a whole lot of different problems all together in one body when they arrive, if they have cancer and diabetes and some arthritis, or if they have ulcerative colitis and high cholesterol and heart problems, all of those things, when you truly heal the body, all of the diseases disappear. It doesn't really matter. And we may even just recently now have an indication that ALS, that Lou Gehrig's disease, can be alleviated. So, and autism can be healed. And all of the things that your doctor will tell you, either it's genetic, which isn't true, or it's incurable, which is certainly not true. All of those things you can always tell yourself, and this is very valuable. You can always tell yourself, yes, doctor, my disease may be incurable with your methods. It's not incurable with a true healing method. And that's the answer, and that's something that'll keep you going, and it'll keep you searching, and keep you finding the right answer, the good nutrition, the organic food, the vegetarian food, and the food that truly nourishes your body's systems the way they need to be nourished.
And I'd like to say that, once again, The Beautiful Truth, the movie, the documentary about the Gerson therapy and about the how we can reverse the terrible damage that's being done to us, is playing this week until the 4th of December at Lemley's Music Hall 3 on 9036 Wilshire Boulevard. And for this weekend, we will have those books available at a $5 discount for each of the books. So that's Healing the Gerson Way and Dr. Max Gerson, Healing the Hopeless, which is Dr. Max Gerson's biography, which will tell you what gave rise to all of this healing knowledge.
Well, thank you so much. That's in Los Angeles that the movie is playing this week. And we are at the very end of our show. I really have appreciated and enjoyed every minute of this.
Well, thank you. I certainly was very grateful that you were making this available to us and that we can try to help your audience and the public and people in general to be well and stay well and enjoy life to the fullest.
Thank you, Sophia.
Thank you, Charlotte. And Howard.
Thank you so much for having us on, Sophia.
Yes. You'll come again.
Yes.
We look forward to it.
Okay.